Book Chat, where we will be talking about Dawn of X. This week's book of choice is the first couple of issues of Marauders. So unfortunately, Juan and Rodders aren't going to be in this episode because I messed up everyone's schedule.
It's fine. You'll have to apologize for that almost.
So this episode feels very cosmically chosen.
Yeah.
So that like I can talk about Marauders for like an hour.
We got some monologues.
Unfortunately. So I'm Amos, obviously.
I'm Fox.
And let's talk about Marauders. I think there's a good place to start with Marauders is the timeline of from its announcement to the time it was published. So Cena Grace left Marvel sometime last year. And on the 29th of June, he posted this really, really long essay that was like not a takedown of Marvel, but he was essentially talking about how Marvel mistreated him as a gay writer. And so that was fine. And I was kind of at that point, I was like, oh, maybe I don't want to really get into House of X, Powers of X, because like Cena Grace got really burned with that. And I don't want to like fall in love with another author and have that happen to them again. So fast forward to like mid-July, I'm flying back home and Marauders gets announced. And Cena Grace retweets the team that Gary Duggan posts with the caption, "That's my team." And he says that he feels a little bit burned because Duggan was the one who actually put him into Marvel in the first place. So at that point, I was like sort of put off with Marauders. I was like, okay, maybe I'll read the Dawn of X books, but I won't read Marauders. So from the get-go, I had like a sort of like a weird relationship with Marauders because Cena Grace, and I know I talk about him a lot on this podcast, was as a Middle Easterner, as a gay Middle Easterner, it's so nice and I feel a lot of kinship with him because all the stuff that he writes about speaks directly to me, and I've read a lot of his personal projects. I've read a lot about his like work on Ghosted in LA, and I've read some of his Jughead's Time Adventure stuff. So I do enjoy him as a writer also.
I want to read his, because I don't know if he's still doing it, but I know he recently did Power Rangers, and I want to read some of his Power Rangers because I'm unabashedly a Power Rangers comic book fan, but I have not kept up. And
he's also, I think, writing for Green Lantern. He's writing for the 80th anniversary. He's writing a story for Simon Biaz, who's a Muslim.
Oh yeah, I think so. He's I forgot what artist he's doing. Ramon Villalobos. I think he's doing a story. Ramon was going to be doing the another comic of that I like that got, well, that I was excited for. It got canceled. What's it called? Wildcats. It was going to be under the Warren Ellis Wildstorm imprint, and he was going to be doing the art for it. So it's going to be cool to see him and Cena work on a short story together at least.
So and then after that, I think I texted you this because I think we were talking about this when it first came out. But the first couple of issues, Storm and Bishop kept getting whitewashed.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do remember.
It was such a huge controversy.
Yeah. It looks, we're not going to go into the details of what happened in the newest issue, but it looks like they at least fixed the colorist issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a positive, I can say. At least that's one. Oh, and so I'm just going to say at least they heard that sort of positive aspect. My one thing I'm worried is that the colorist who did the first few issues of Marauders is going to be the colorist on Champions, which is a majoritatively people of color on that team, including people such as Riri Williams, Comic-Con, and Miles Morales. So I haven't seen any colored preview pages for it yet, since they were, before, you know, the shutdown, they were only able to do the black and whites.
Yeah.
And I'm worried. But I'm going to try to keep my hopes up. That might be better.
So, like, it's just like, so, like, the first couple of issues of Marauders had, like, whitewashed Storm and whitewashed Bishop. And, like, so at that point, I was like, maybe I don't want to get into Marauders, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the dialogue was very weird. You know, it felt very, I can make gay jokes because I'm straight, but it's funny because I'm making it not at their expense, I'm making it with them. That's how some of, like, Bobby's dialogue felt. And so, I wasn't really into Marauders, and the issue just sort of compounded, and the fact that a lot of people kind of ignore these legitimate criticisms of Marauders is sort of what pushes me to hate it more, which I think is sort of childish of me. And I get it, like that's a completely childish thing on my part, but it did stem from the fact that I loved Tina Grace as a writer, and I loved his stories, and I do find flaws with Tina Grace, and I have talked extensively about what I don't like in Iceman, even though it's one of my favorite books. Nothing is free from my grasp. I apologize completely for being that one person who cannot shut up about how something is flawed.
No, we need somebody who's willing to criticize, because I like a lot of ex-Twitter, but a lot of it feels very defensive of the writers and unable to criticize them. Mm-hmm. And so I want criticism. I want it to be talked about, because it has to. We have to be able to criticize our favorites. We can't just blindly follow them. Like, mm-hmm. I love Miss Marvel. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody knows she's my favorite character. Mm-hmm. In my room, I may or may not have a giant cardboard cutout that I hang all my convention badges from of Miss Marvel. But how she was written in the first arc of Mark Waid's Champions, it really sucked. They wrote, in my opinion, they wrote her terribly, and I wasn't just going to let it go, the criticism, because I liked all the characters on that book. Mm-hmm. I still bought the book because I bought that book because I hoped eventually it would change teams, and it did, and we got really good, well-written story out of it. Jim's up, and now, hopefully, Eve Ewing, whenever it actually comes out. Mm-hmm. So, we have to be able to criticize our favorites. It's not...
And this is just to add to it. There was another criticism of Marauders that was, like, as it was coming down the pipeline, Duggan sold it as this really sort of racist story. And I've had this issue with Hawks Pox as well. A lot of the nations that seem to be against Krakoa aren't fake nations. They're real nations with what you would call dictatorships, you know? So it was it felt very white savory to me. And that's an issue with a lot of comics. That's an issue with a lot of stories that have people of color. That's an issue, especially when it's written by a white author, even though it's not their intent, because they usually focus on a white character more than they focus on the people of color. And that's natural. Yeah. I have a tendency to focus on Apocalypse because he's Arab, even though he's a genocidal maniac, you know?
We all got problematic faves.
Yeah. So that's like the timeline of Marauders for me. And that's sort of like I came into it with a mindset that I might not like it, you know? So I came into it sort of not willing to like it.
But I still also think you've also said things you do like about it.
Oh yeah.
So and I think that's what makes you valid, because you are willing to admit when you like something, but you're also willing to say when you don't like it, and rightfully so, as anybody should.
So I would also like to add that I'm a very big fan of Christian Frost.
I've noticed. You like how ugly he is.
I do like how ugly he is. That's great. I don't like issue like 5 because he's drawn as a twink. I specifically hate issue 5 because he's drawn like a twink and Bobby's drawn like a twink. And there's like, those are their personalities. They're both, one of them, like their entire, like Bobby's entire thing is that he's bland looking. So he looks like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And Christian's entire thing is that he's like kind of ugly. Like from the Emma Frost solo, he looks kind of ugly. I say this with love.
I don't believe it.
We'll talk more about Ugly Christian, like when we get to Marauders 10.
Okay, no, that works. I came into Marauders. I liked the team lineup. I thought it was cool. Like, it had a lot of my favorites in it. I was disappointed. Nightcrawler was not involved because he is a pirate. Mm-hmm. And It that felt a little weird to me, but I like the story. It's just a lot of it's mixed bag to me, and it's a mixed bag in both art and writing. I genuinely like Marauders because I like pirate stories. I grew up on, well, okay, saying growing up is a strong word. I really loved One Piece. And have you ever watched One Piece or read One Piece?
I watched it. We were once I was once trapped at my friend's house and they made me watch One Piece. So I don't have like positive or negative. I just couldn't get into it.
It just like Apocalypse is your problematic fave, One Piece is my problematic fave. Because it's a very anti-authoritarian book, but it also has not the best. There's a lot of gay jokes in it, and
So kind of like Marauders.
okay, no, but the jokes aren't with, they're not laughing with us. I think there a lot of it feels very laughing at us, and that sucks. But also, it's a book that's. It's really about anti-fascism and to some point anti-capitalism because 95% of the villains are either extremely wealthy, rich people like slave traders and then the other half are government officials and or royalty and it has a lot of powerful moments, and I really liked it. And I was hoping we would get a lot more moments of that in Marauders. We've gotten cool moments. Don't get me wrong. I've really enjoyed some of the moments. But I think I was hoping for a little bit more. I think I might have psyched myself out, hoping I was gonna get a little more than we did. But I still enjoy it as a whole. It's not in my top favorites. Like when it first started, it was in my top favorites. It is not anymore. I would say probably it's in the, I'd probably say in the lower half of books. I'd say it's I would say it's in the lower half of the books. But yeah, I like it. It's just not my favorite. But here's the thing, I like all of the Dawn of X books. I like all of them.
I
There are
think
just some I'd less like less than others.
I mean that's kind of fair because like the one book I like the least is Marauders, and that's just because it just didn't click with me as a person. You know, I still read it and there's some like really enjoyable parts of it. Like not to take away from our conversations about this criticism, but like I think issue two is really good in the fact that it's so absurd. It was like genuinely the best 10 minutes of my life reading that for the first time because you get to see like the you get to go from like this very serious conversation between Emma and the Cuckoos and Shaw to like Pyro getting a face tattoo and
Yeah.
losing his shit. It's really good.
I know everybody rags on Pyro's face tattoo. I think it's awesome for him because it makes him look cooler.
I think it's a good way to like differentiate him from Pyro too.
Yeah. Pyro is a very dumb character, but I think his face tattoo makes him look awesome.
I mean, like, here's the thing. I'm not hating it for the face tattoo. I just love how feral like Pyro is in this entire run. It's very enjoyable for me. I kind of like reading Marauders for Pyro is a thing. I think he has like some really good lines, some really good interactions. I think he's very stupid in a nice way. Like he's not stupid for the sake of being humor. He's stupid for the sake of the plot.
Would it be safe to call him a himbo?
I don't think he's a himbo because he's too twinky for
Fair
it.
enough. Fair enough.
But that's because like this artist draws everyone but Shaw as like a twink.
Yeah, true. True, true. I'm hoping the new artist, I think his name's Stefano Caselli, he used to do, hopefully he does better. He used to draw a lot of Amazing Spider-Man I really liked. So Hulk and he made Bishop look really good in the
I mean, like,
newest.
I think he made Bishop look black for the first time in like the entire Marauders run, and that's a very strong word for me to say, but that's like he finally has like distinctive black features, which I think the previous artist was sort of scared of committing to.
Yeah, I loved, but yeah, so we have to stop talking about that issue. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Art's so good. The art is just so good in the new issue.
Yeah, the art. I've liked Stefano Caselli for quite some time. I read a lot of his Amazing Spider-Man with Dan Slott. Back with Dan Slott, I used to enjoy his writing. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of the, he did about half the Amazing Spider-Man issues for Spider Island, which was actually a pretty good event. I think it's a much better concept than it is in execution.
Mm-hmm. And I think, okay, so I went back to look at Duggan's bibliography because I wanted to see if he had any books that I could read, like solo books, with a lot of the writers have solo books or have worked on webcomics or something along those lines, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or have like really extensive, like we've worked in comics for like 10 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So Duggan apparently wrote a lot of very non-ensemble team, because the thing he's well known for is like Deadpool. That's what Duggan is really known for.
Yeah, I actually read his Deadpool back when my father was still in the picture. One of the few things we bonded over was Deadpool comics. And I read a lot of Deadpool. I read because it was right after Daniel Way left Deadpool after his huge run of those comics. It was Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn, comedian, co-writing Deadpool. And the first arc with the Dead Presidents was hilarious.
Yeah. He also wrote Miss Deadpool and the Howling Commandos. He made Shikla as a character, and I love Shikla. And like everyone knows, I love Shikla as a character. He's my favorite Deadpool character.
You love Shikla. I do know this, yes.
Yes. And I think he Shikla's concept is racist. I'll just say that thought out. She's a demon. She's a succubus who came from the Middle East, specifically from the Gulf area. And that's kind of a stereotype about the women there. Like, we're either oppressed under our husbands and our fathers, and we're uneducated and idiots, or we're sex demons. There's no kind of in between. And I think that happens a lot with a lot of, like, women of color in general, that we're at these two extremes, and white men like to choose which one we are, you know?
And no, I've definitely heard of that, yeah.
So Shikla, like, being a sex demon is very racist. Like, let's just say what it is. But, like, I do like the fact that she turns into, like, a hideous monster. I think that's very hot.
I love your affinity for ugly characters.
I like ugly things, you know?
That's fair.
It's great for me. My life's so much easier now that I have, like, decided that I don't follow Western conventions of beauty. My life has become so much easier. So he has good concepts, but I've also realized that as I went through his bibliography, he hasn't really written an ensemble team. And
he did Uncanny Avengers, and that was pretty fun.
Yeah, but his Uncanny Avengers are sort of like Uncanny Avengers is such a mixed bag for me because it doesn't really go anywhere. It feels very stalling.
Oh, but I think that was probably because of Secret Empire.
Yeah.
That was such a... It had Captain America in it. And we all know what was going on with Captain America that time.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Deadpool Rogue to get... I like that ship. I will not... I felt cheated when that was cut off. That's a good ship.
And he has written Nova, too. But I don't think... I personally have read his Nova. I'm not a huge fan of Nova, and I apologize for that. I just can't really get into, like, the teenage characters.
That's fair.
So, like, it's weird because I really like New Mutants, and I really like the teenage team more than I like the OG New Mutants. You know, like, I like Glob, and I like Armor, and I like Pixie. I like the twins. I think those are great, but I can't really get into, like, other Marvel, like... teams that are children.
That's
not children.
Teenagers.
Yes. To be fair, I actually did recently get into Ms. Marvel, so I can read about, like, I forgot his name already. Her new sidekick.
Amulet?
Amulet. I kept wanting to call him Nazar, because that's, like, the thing he uses, and I'm like, that's not his name. Marvel would not do that.
I love his armor so much. He looks so cool.
I got into Ms. Marvel, but that's just because, like, someone showed me an Arab character, and I was like, okay, goddammit, I have to read this. Which is essentially why I also got into Deadpool. So, as you can see, like, I get dragged. If you tell me there's an Arab character or something, I'll probably read it. Even if you lie to me, I won't check. Like, I'll just keep looking for it. That's the only way you can get me into anything.
I loved, because the designer of Amulet is the woman who redesigned Dust, mm-hmm. who absolutely needed to get a redesign as a character. Mm-hmm. And I love when she was describing Amulet. She's like, he's friend-shaped. And
it definitely is.
Oh, another thing, if you like Amulet, I don't know if it's coming out or not, but apparently there was like a series of annuals that were, I believe, supposed to come out. I think that were supposed to come out sometime this summer, so chances are they're going to be coming out in closer to wintertime. Mm-hmm. But Miles Morales Spider-Man annual is going to have Amulet in it. So just if you want to keep a watch out for that, he is going to be in that.
But yeah, I think, again, like, so Teeny Howard has sort of the same problem in Excalibur. I'm sorry, we're talking about, like, how Duggan hasn't really written a good ensemble class story in a while, just to bring this back to that conversation. So uh-huh. Teeny Howard sort of suffers from the same problem, but she makes up for it in, like, because her story is driven by Betsy becoming Captain America, you know, not Captain America, Captain Britain, you know, yeah. So it makes sense to focus on Betsy. So even though that she focuses on Betsy, she still gets away with it because that's sort of the point of the whole book. I hope we get like more perspectives as we go later on, and we'll talk more about this next week because we're going to be talking about Excalibur.
Yeah,
but
I'm very excited about.
Yeah, Marauders has this problem where it doesn't know which character it wants at this point of view. It's kind of leaning strongly towards Emma, but hasn't really secured the bag in that sense. Like, it hasn't, like, it doesn't have, like, the hook, and, like, it doesn't really, you can't really just reel it in with Emma, and you can't really consider her the main character of the book, because so much is going on all the time.
Yeah.
And I think he tried to make it Kitty for a while, but I don't understand why Kitty had to die, and that seems like a very weird thing to have in Dawn of X for the protocols to start failing so early on.
Yeah.
I guess he was trying to subvert it, but like it also doesn't really make sense story wise.
I agree. I think he was trying to go for the trying to like a tug at a heartstrings type of thing. Like we all know she's gonna come back.
Yeah.
She's the Red Queen of the Hellfire Club. She coming back. And yeah. I do like how he writes Sebastian Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
I think he writes him very well.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very conniving individual, and I think it's a good way to write him. And I like how everybody's written Sebastian Shaw so far, including Hickman and Ed Brisson, because we got to see Ed Brisson write Sebastian for that one issue of New Mutants, and it was really good. But Sebastian, in my opinion, is a great villain for this team, and I'm curious if he's going to get his comeuppance. Mm-hmm. Like, is he going to be, because like if they're able to make the resurrection protocols work for Kitty, mm-hmm. she's not going to remember her death.
Yeah.
She's not going to remember what's his name killing her. So he could very well get away scot-free.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
I think that's another problem with Marauders, and it's because there's too many villains. There's like four villains thus far. and none of them are, like, truly connected in, like, a way that makes sense. He seemed to be, like, just, like, drawing, like, red lines between them in an attempt to connect them, which makes the story seem like it's going in a circle rather than, like, going in, like, a linear progressive plot. Because, like, a lot of the plots in Dawn of X keep kind of going back and forth between different plot points, but there's some linear progression. In Marauders, it's sort of kind of nothing happens until the last page of the issue.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Like, the pacing in the book is weird in a sense that it just doesn't make sense. It feels very, I didn't really know how to write the story, so I'm just gonna, like, dump it via dialogue and put some action scenes in the middle so it seems like something has happened. But that's sort of the reason why I also don't enjoy Marauders. It's very filler heavy, and for a book that's an ensemble team, but it's not character focused, you need less filler and more plot. X-Force gets away with having more filler because it's driven by the characters. Like, the overall plot isn't really there, you know? It's mostly the characters talking to each other and trying to figure out what to do next. And there isn't, like, one looming big bad. The looming big bad is the world. They're trying to defend themselves against the world. Duggan, on the other hand, has this problem where it's just filler after filler, and he forgets that this is not a character-driven team because he's not writing them as a character-driven team.
Does that make sense? No, it makes sense. All it made me think when you were saying he's tying where he's, you know, writing red lines between stuff. All it made me think of is that I forget that YouTube mystery show where it's like, I've connected things. You've connected nothing. I have connected them. That just made you and him sitting in a room together just being like, I connected them. No, you didn't.
I think the biggest example of that is the Singaporean and Manipurian woman, I think, who starts siding with the Baby Hellfire Club. And that sort of kind of came out of left field.
Yeah.
You know?
That felt like, he's like, hey, you remember the Jason Aaron comics? I'd be like, yes, yeah. Duggan, we do. That's another reason I like the other X books, is because they are creating new villains.
Yeah.
We have X-Force, we got the weird plant things, you know, we got Horde Culture, New Mutants, we got that weird person who's summoning monsters. Mm-hmm. We're getting new, and, you know, X-Force, we got that flower group in Wolverine, we got, you know,
the Invisible Lady.
Yeah, we got the Pale Lady, and Dracula's not exactly a new villain, they've battled him before, but they're putting a new spin on it. They're not really putting a new spin on the Young Hellfire Club, other than giving them a new name.
I think what's also flawed with the Young Hellfire Club, and I've said this before, is that it does make sense for Emma to be fighting kids. Like, if this was just Pyro, if this was, like, if Pyro was leading this team, and, like, I know Pyro's, like, 23, but in my head, he's 17. And if Pyro was leading this team and he was the character driving this team, I would kind of give it to Duggan, like, yeah, the 17-year-old kid wants to fight a bunch of 15-year-olds to feel strong, you know?
Yeah.
I
did like that she mentally messed with them, like, for making them seem like they were on fire. Mm-hmm. That was a good way to teach a lesson. Not to actually burn the children, but, like... Yeah. This is what it's gonna feel like.
I think the thing is that, like, I like Cade as a villain a lot. I think Cade is hilarious as a villain. Because he doesn't really want to hurt people. He just wants to mess with everyone.
Yeah.
He is kind of like Arcade.
He's kind of like who?
Arcade.
Oh, yeah.
Because Arcade, in the end, doesn't particularly want to kill anyone. He's just doing this all for his own amusement.
He's like, hey, isn't this hilarious? He's just kind of like, isn't this hilarious? He's Marvel's Riddler.
Yes. I'd say that Cade is Marvel's Joker. And I don't say this with, like, a light hand. I say this that, like, he's very I don't think Bronze Age. I think Silver Age, where kind of violence was... You had to kind of right around the violence.
Yeah.
So Joker was sort of like a really comedic villain because he couldn't be violent.
I don't think he would be an equivalent. Joker would be exactly his equivalent. I'm trying to think of who would be a good DC equivalent for Cade. It's kind of a hard decision to come up with. But I like him. I really liked him in that 2-issue arc of Black Cat with where, you know, that was drawn by Chris Anka, where Wolverine as Patch and Black Cat teamed up and fought Cade. I think he wrote Cade really well. I can never remember who's writing the Black Cat comics right now, but he wrote them really well.
Yeah. I don't know how. Let's talk about stuff we like about Marauders, because I feel like I've said so much about the fact that so much criticism of it, and like my favorite issue is issue 2. And I 100% say this because of like the scene where Pyro gets a face tattoo, and we're all just supposed to accept the fact that he definitely has a face tattoo now. You know, I think that's very funny. That was very. I don't think Duggan wanted it to be funny. I think it just sort of came off as funny.
I like Marauders because I like gray area type of. I like how he writes Kitty when Kitty's fighting.
Yeah,
he writes her as very. I think he writes her when she's in like fighting situations. She's written very well. She's very fluid and like she's quick on her feet and tactically smart.
Yeah,
and I like her using, because so many times you see Kitty use her powers more evasively.
Yeah.
Then offensively, and watching her phase the gun into two soldiers' legs was dark but really cool, like move. And then her phasing through a tank to drop a smoke grenade in it.
Yeah.
That was, and then phasing back out of it. That was cool. And then her, you know, sword fighting, like she. And I think the idea to make her a Red Queen was a really neat idea. Mm-hmm. And I think her outfit is fantastic. Like I said, I'm a very big fan of pirate stories. Not because I want to be a pirate, but I think they're interesting characters. A lot of times the pirates I like are more adventurers than pirates. Mm-hmm. They're just scurvy. I like, for example, my favorite Assassin's Creed game is the pirate one. Mm-hmm. And I like that he made Bishop the Red Bishop. I think that's really cool. Who do you think should be her knight? Who do you think should be Kitty's knight? Pyro? Pyro should be Kitty's knight.
I think I should be Bobby. That's very bold of me to say, because I think this is like one. A lot of people thought I didn't like Marauders. At least a lot of people in my close circle, because they were like, "Oh, it's because you like Warren and Bobby more than you like Christian and Bobby." And it's like, no, I think they're a hilarious combination together, because you know that like Bobby Drake and Christian Frost are like horribly mismatched for each other, but they're gonna try to make it work because they're like two gays on Krakoa, and they're the only two people that Marvel will let. They're the only two people that are single and that are gay on Krakoa, and that Marvel editorial will let me gay for the next while.
Yeah.
So they're kind of have to make it work.
Bendis made enough waves, and there were enough waves caused with the Iceman thing that they can't really put that under the rug anymore.
Yeah.
Even though this is going to sound bad, I think he should have been bisexual. Mm-hmm. I think Bobby should have been bisexual personally.
Yeah.
At least I would have wished it as someone who is. Because, like, I just think he, like, hey, She could have just said, hey, you have a crush on this person.
Yeah.
I think just telling him he's gay, it was weird to me.
Yeah. And
it was funny. There's a YouTuber I like. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He does comic videos. Comic Pop. I don't know if you've ever heard of that YouTube channel.
I have heard of him, but I have a hard time watching people talk about comics. This is hypocritical of me. I can listen to them, but I can't watch a YouTube video.
That's funny. I put them on in the background, so it's almost like a podcast. Like I put it on my phone and I just put my phone down and go about what I was doing, or I put it on my TV through my PlayStation, and he tends to be very apolitical because he knows how the comic book YouTube landscape can be.
Yeah.
But he has these things because he does these things called back issues where they're almost like hour and a half long discussions where he explains comics to people who never read comics and or have like tangential knowledge of them. And then he has these things that are like snippets of stuff that got cut from them called tangents. And one of the tangents is he did a whole like 3-minute like angry rant where he complained about that scene, and he's like, hey, it completely took away the agency from the character. Mm-hmm. And he just went on. He's like, she was such a jerk in that moment. And it was so, she looked so dumb with just like shrugging. He's like, it was such a dumb moment. And he's like, if he's gay, fine. That's cool. I'm happy. But that was so dumb. And it was just one of those moments where you're like, okay, Mr. YouTuber, you get points. Because I'm very suspicious of YouTubers.
Yeah.
As someone who's like, liked a lot of YouTubers and then fallen out of, you know, enjoying them because a lot of them turn into dummies. For example, Grace Randolph, the movie YouTuber. Oof, she does a lot. And it's funny, she actually used to work for Marvel. We'll get back to topic. I'm sorry.
Yeah, oh, sorry. I just wanted to add to that. Like, I have some very hot takes, and my, I guess my hot sexuality take is that I never want them to confirm Warren as bisexual. Like, never. Like, at most, they confirm him as, like, heteroflexible. Because I think that'd be hilarious. I would love to see Marvel PR try to explain why they made Warren heteroflexible, you know? Like, it would be hilarious for me to watch. And the PR mess out of it is going to be hilarious. I want to see the fallout. It's all for the chaos in that sense. Like, personal opinion, I do think Warren is bisexual. I think, and I don't think it's just because he's a pretty blonde. I think it kind of fits with his character because he's all about, like, love. A lot of his character arcs after he gets turned into Archangel is that what grounds him is that his love for his friends and his love for Candy, his love for Charlotte, these are things that, like, really ground him. So I think that he should definitely be bisexual, but I think it would be much funnier if he was heteroflexible. That's, like, my hot take. And, like, if anyone thinks, like, if you micro-label yourself, I don't particularly care. I respect it. I just think heteroflexible as a label is really funny.
I think I agree with you. That would be hilarious. That's one thing. Either him or Beast.
Yeah. Beast is most definitely, okay. For Beast, he's definitely gay because he acts like a gay man from the 70s. Who definitely does cocaine every morning. That's what Beast acts like.
He mixes it in with his coffee.
Yeah. However, God, what do I want to say? However, he and Cecilia Reyes are, like, platonically married. They're married for the tax.
Cecilia Reyes or Kavita Rao?
No, Cecilia Reyes. Because, like, they kind of were, like, pushing them together in the 90s.
Mm.
But I think they were scared, but then they kept pushing him with Trish.
Oh, God, I hate Trish, Toby.
I don't like her. I think she's funny as, like, a character. I think half of the stuff she does is insane.
Yeah.
But she breaks so many codes of, like, journalism.
Is it weird? I think Dr. Nemesis and Kavita Rao would be a cute couple.
It's sort of like Jean and Wolverine for me. And this is not like in an insulting way. This is more of like, it's been written so creepily, I don't think I could get into it.
That's fair. I think even though also she seems like, I don't know why I see her as an asexual character. She's just like, she's like, I don't know why she just seems like a type of person who's like, I don't really care. I just do my work. I can just imagine like Dr. Nemesis trying to flirt with her and just going completely over her head.
Ugh. Well, I mean, there's that like bit in like where there's a bit in X Club where he like kind of checks her out and the starfish tells him that he's checking out her ass and tells her that he's checking out her ass. And then she's like kind of like annoyed but flustered. I think there might be something there. I just don't think I would personally enjoy it because I do think Kavita Rao deserves to have a girlfriend. I think, okay, so like this is the issue with Marvel. I think we need more women on women representation.
Oh, I agree.
I think that's an issue. Like, even just like characters just saying they're bisexual, they don't need to like date anyone at the moment. Like, just more bisexual characters, more gay characters. Like, I think Marvel has this issue where they think that like once you say that a character is gay or a character is bi, they have to date someone, and it doesn't work like that. I've been single for a very long time, you know, like I know this as like a bisexual that like I don't. Like, I go, like, 2 to 3 years in between my relationships, you know? So...
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I'm about the same, longer, but we don't need to talk about that.
Yeah. I think that's just, like, Marvel's main problem, is that, like, oh, they're like, oh, this character's bisexual, we have to, like, make them into a relationship, or we have to make them a cheater so that they can sleep with both sexes, and I was like, I don't really think it works that way.
No.
And I think that's also a problem sort of with docs as a whole, is that it's very horny, but it's very horny in a straight way.
Yeah.
I'm all for characters being horny. I'm known in the community to like make horny posts. It's fine. It's okay to be horny. It's just the way that Marvel does it. It's not very appealing to a lot of women, and it's not very appealing to a lot of gay men either. And I'm sure like Juan and others could have like more a stronger opinion on like the gay part because they enjoy the horny stuff, and like I'm not gonna take that away from them. But a lot of gay men in my closer circle, people who I've known longer and who are closer in age to me, not that like Rodders and Juan are like 20 years older than
me. Hey, Rod and Juan, she just called you old. I wouldn't take that from her.
I'm just saying, like, people who I grew up with, basically, like, have closer relationships with, kind of, sort of, don't find a lot of it attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of the panels are, like, really hot, and, like, some of the panels are, like, they're drawn very sexy, but because there's a lot of, we've talked about this last episode, about how there's too many straight artists, you know?
Yeah.
We need more gay artists so that, like, men stop looking like shit.
It would be greatly appreciated. I think probably one of the hottest scenes she looked so comfortable was that scene with Emma where she hired Callisto to be her knight.
Yeah.
And like she was just standing there in her underwear and bra, and it wasn't like a big thing. She wasn't like posing. It was just like, Look at this very pretty lady existing.
Yeah,
and I thought that was very attractive.
Yeah,
and then like Callisto is hot because like she's punk and cool and has an eye patch and she should be a pirate.
Mm-hmm. Well, she used to be the original Marauder. True. She started it.
True.
I think there's a lot of scenes where I feel like I couldn't really get into Christian for the first couple of issues. I promise I won't talk about issue 10.
No, I get it.
Because he was too pretty. I was like, this is really unrealistic for me. This is like, I need the bar to be set lower. I can't get into this fantasy because the men here are drawn in such like a pretty boy, Bishonen way. I felt like I was reading like a shoujo manga.
Mm. Oh, and shoujo mangas.
I do love shoujo manga, so it's not like a bad thing. It's just like, it was like, I can't really get into this fantasy, you know?
That's
this
fair.
Fantasy of like, I'm attracted to this guy. I will say though, once they give once like they changed artists, like stuff gets better for this. But like, I'm trying to think of like the sexiest scene in Marauders for me. God, I think it might have to be the scene where, I kind of like the scenes where like Shinobi Shaw is talking. I think he's drawn very sexy.
Yeah.
I like Shinobi Shaw. I think he's a great antagonist. I don't think he's a villain per se, because a lot of the times that he comes back in X-Men is that he kind of gets bullied a while, and then he goes back to doing whatever. I think one of the first issues I've read of X-Men were from Ninciaga's run, and he was like talking about, and it was an issue where Betsy and Warren go to the Hellfire Club, and Shinobi like monologues for like the entire issue. So I find him very attractive because he's a crybaby, sort of. So, as you can see, like, I feel like this issue kind of exposed my taste in men. That I don't have really good taste in men, I think, is the thesis of this episode. One more scene that I find hot is the where Bobby gave everyone like frostbite. I think that's hot.
That was an epic moment.
Yeah.
Fire. I think my sexiest moment other than the Emma moment was in the first issue where Wolverine just like hauls butt to Kitty's boat and just like straight up to swim so he can get his alcohol.
Yeah.
He's just like, did you get it? And he's like, yeah, awesome. And just takes off running and then just walks back up like soaking wet with just like a barrel of alcohol in his underneath his arm. It was both sexy and hilarious because like, you one track mind weirdo, and you just want to get schlitzed. And I think that was a fun moment. That was probably in my opinion, one of the sexiest moments of the book. I think we should probably get into where we want the future of the book to go to.
Yeah. So I guess I think where I would want it to go to is kind of to weed off some of the villains. There's too many villains. I'd like to see Duggan focus on more character stories. I think him killing Kitty was really weird, and like, we expected it, you know? Like, we kind of expected that one of the characters was going to die, and we sort of all guessed it was going to be Kitty, but the problem with that is that it kind of shifted the tone of the book into, like, we love Kitty, blah, 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 and, like, it's kind of unearned. Because it really feels insincere and unearned, because you really gotta have to, like, love Kitty for that scene to have hit home for you, you know?
Yeah.
I think I'd like to see it written less horny. I'd like to see more of an emphasis on Emma and Christian's relationship, because I think that's where you can get, like, a lot of... And that's kind of biased for me as, like, a Christian fan. I kind of want to see more of him. But I kind of want to see him do more stuff, especially with maybe Bishop. I think he and Bishop would work together very well as a team, because Christian is very smart, but he's not very tactical. He's not very strong. However, he's very cunning and very... He's really good at hiding details, and I think this is something from, like, the Emma Frost solo, which was kind of the only other book he's in, is that, like, his thing is that he hid the fact that he was gay, and he was with a boyfriend, and he was planning, and he was really deep in that relationship with his boyfriend for a couple of years from his father, you know? So, I think he's very good at being devious, very good at being cunning, but we don't really see that, so I'd like to see something between him and Bishop, because Bishop seems to be doing his own thing in the book.
Yeah.
So him teaming up with Christian sort of kind of makes sense. I'd also like to see this is like something stupid that Swan and I texted about a while ago. We were thinking of that maybe Christian deserves a code name, and that code name should be White Bishop, because it would be completely 100%. Racist on his part.
Bishop.
I think we deserve Christian Frost to be a little bit racist. A little bit.
He literally is Emma's white bishop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that could be his code name. I mean,
I think he deserves a better one, but like, I think it'd be funny just because like, it would come off as, it definitely comes off as racist. And I think maybe Duggan wants to explore like, how like the characters are treated, because like, you have two white people as a white queen and like the white bishop. Like that's like, you can kind of talk about race, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that would be like a good conversation to have. I don't know. I feel like maybe someone else would write better, because I'm not gonna act like I'm a better writer than Duggan, because I don't think I am. Anyone who has seen my actual writing knows I'm not a good writer.
I've been meaning to read your fanfics.
I only write fluff, or just downright like stupid shit. So I'm not a good writer, and I'm not gonna hold it over like Duggan. That's like, oh, I'm better than him or whatever. I just think there's a lot of room for humor and a lot of room for like misunderstandings between the character to cause humor, but also to deepen the relationships, because this is a team we've never really seen work together before in this sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, this is Cena Grace's team, and Cena Grace set it up as a team where it was like Christian and Emma kind of do their own thing, but Emma kind of has a soft spot for Bobby, so she kind of drags him along to do her dirty work.
Uh-huh.
And then Kitty, since she was like the president, she was like the head of the school, she would use Bobby to like kind of teach the kids to be good with the kids. And then Bishop and Bobby were close friends, and they have this relationship that's like, oh yeah, we're friends, we're going to do stuff together, and we're going to go out and do stuff. So this is a team that's never really worked this close with each other before.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with like Castillo and Storm. And Storm usually leads the book, you know, when she's in a book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's a natural born leader. Yeah. So putting her on a back burner kind of takes away, kind of like, would give room for more understanding, like, why is she on the back burner and why they don't think Kitty lead, or why they don't think Emma lead. I'm not talking out of jealousy. I'm just talking about, like, logically, I'm pretty sure Storm would have those thoughts, because she does not play second fiddle. She did not even play second fiddle to Scott. And Scott is, like, the quintessential leader of the X-Men. So I feel like there's room for those like misunderstandings and communication of like why the team is set up like that, because we don't really get explanations other than nepotism.
Yeah. I was really thinking about it throughout this entire time, other than Pyro and Storm, all of the characters on the team were all characters that were in Cena Grace's Iceman book.
Yeah.
Like, if you would put, like, instead of, you know, Storm and Pyro, if it was, like, Dakin and, what's her name, Shadow Veil?
Mm.
Or the drag queen character. That would have been...
I think it's Dark... I'll check it out.
Yeah. Dark Veil? Is it Dark Veil?
Yeah.
Dark Veil. If that was on the team, that would, you know what? Actually, I think I would kind of like them more on the team. Like, if it was Dakin instead of Pyro and Dark Veil instead of Storm,
mm-hmm.
I think I would sort of like that team a little more, even. Only if Cena was writing it, because those are his characters.
Well, because the thing is with Kitty was sort of in the book, but she was sort of in and out of the book because she was doing her own thing in Gold.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they were teammates on Gold too, like that. I think that's why Kitty's on this book too. But they're close friends, and I think it would be fun because they are close friends, and Bobby and Kitty did have a lot of fun together being, like, doing stupid shit together, even when they were dating, even though nobody really liked that.
Yeah.
That was weird. And I think Storm has always been, like, a motherly character to Kitty, but maybe this would be the time where Storm really just stops being a mother to Kitty and starts being an equal to Kitty.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the issues sort of, like, a lot of stories sort of regress them back into, like, this mother-daughter thing. They've never been that. They've been more older sister, younger sister. You know?
Speaking of Kitty and Storm
mm-hmm.
being equals, this is very on the nose. I know it. But I wish they would depose I wish it would depose Sebastian and make Storm Black Queen of the Hellfire Club.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. Only if Shinobi Shaw is still her knight.
Oh, Shinobi, he's not Sebastian's knight. He's Sebastian's bishop.
Oh, sorry.
His knights are the
Nazi twins.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we can get rid of the Nazi twins. I don't think we need another plot with them. I think they're boring sort of character wise.
Yeah. They I think her knight should be gentle.
Mm-hmm. I think Shinobi deserves like a seat at the table. I think he's gone through enough.
Oh yeah, Shinobi, I would want her to keep Shinobi as her bishop, but I think if she needed a knight, I think it should be gentle, only because their connection through Wakanda, and she was sort of a mentor to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it would also just be really cool to have him gentle be in the book, because Gentle's one of those, in my opinion, underused characters that I really like.
Mm-hmm. I think like going forward, I think the main thing is that like this book is so overcrowded with villains. Like, I get it, people are evil. I get it, I truly do. But there's too many, and he's not doing it in a way that like Hickman does it per se. Hickman does it in like a very like he's introducing a new villain, but it's a very episodic story.
Yeah.
Which probably gonna get picked up probably by issue 12 again. A lot of the older plots. But what happens with Duggan is that he definitely doesn't go through with any of these because the plot is so muddy and heavy with so many villain characters. I really don't know who I'm supposed to be rooting for. And everyone's like too sneaky, you know, like everyone's like, oh, we're like doing this behind someone else's back. And it's like, I get it. These characters are conniving and evil, but like they kind of have to work together.
Yeah.
At some point, here's the thing. This is another thing he has. He does a lot of show. He does a lot of like telling, not showing.
No, I agree with you on that. He's not. I do think they could. I would like to for them to show some original villains, and it would definitely be. I think it would definitely be beneficial to the book. I think Sebastian eventually has to get deposed. I really hope he has a cool way to bring Kitty back, and I really hope it's a good reason why they could not bring her back.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing is that I forgot. Sorry, I'll remember it in a minute.
Yeah, you interrupted my groove.
Sorry, sorry.
Okay. I just wanted to make an Emperor's New School reference, or an Emperor's New Groove reference. There is stuff he can do better, and there's stuff I think he's already doing good. It's just, it's a very mixed bag, and especially IMHO with the newest issue. Newest issue had both really awesome moments and then a moment that drive me up the wall, and then there was a moment that I'm just like, what the heck just happened?
We're sort of like contraband of like talking about that because we promised runners and
I think the entire series as a whole, like my feelings around it were all pretty much summed up in that, were like all baked into that one issue, and I just want an entire issue where I'm just like, this was awesome. I loved everything about it. Because most of the other X books, other than like Fantastic Four, X-Men, mm-hmm. have all been like, yeah, I love this issue. So cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could feel the same about Marauders constantly.
I think one of the weirder things Marauders has done, and this is not to say that I don't like Jumbo Carnation. I love Jumbo Carnation as a character. I love fat, fem men. My favorite subtype of men, other than men who are ugly. there's like a Venn diagram. There's like a couple of like ugly, fem, fat men. And that's like the sweet spot for me. But that's not what we're talking about. So Jumbo Carnation, I find it weird that he bought him in. as a character, because he's like a very, he's a very symbolic character in the sense of like, he was like the cause of the riots. He kind of is the reason Sophie Cuckoo died. He kind of like started a lot of shit in Morrison's run. However, he kind of is completely underutilized in Marauders. I feel like a better way to introduce him was like maybe starting a fashion company where they can, I don't know, deliver stuff overseas using his clothes. As like
that would have been cool.
Like I feel like that would have been a neater way to mesh him into the plot. Like, I'm not unhappy to see Castillo, and I'm not unhappy to see Jumbo Carnation. It just feels like they came from such a left field, and it just didn't make any sense in the sense of the story.
I get that. That would be cool. I really hope Jumbo Carnation becomes a bigger, with Jumbo Carnation coming back, I really hope he becomes a bigger part of all the X-books. And I hope it leads to them redesigning a lot of the X-Men's costumes and their looks. Like, I hope, like in X-Factor, how everybody has a new design, I hope he was the person who designed those outfits.
I think he deserves to give Nanny a new outfit.
What does Nanny wear? She's an egg!
Give
her new gloves and boots? I don't know what you want.
I think we deserve Nanny to be sexy. I think we, as a nation, we spent enough time on ugly Nanny. It's time for her to be sexy.
What, are we going to give Nanny a G-string? Is this what's happening? Is this how we're going to do things?
I don't know. Like, he has an artist. I'm not an artist. I'm at best, like, a person. At best.
I am a person standing in front of you asking for a sexy egg lady.
I'm going to go to, like, Marvel HQ and be like, hey. Hey, listen to me. I demand some eggs.
No, you as like an art, as like a performative art piece, you just like, you just along, you know, Marvel headquarters, like all around, you just draw like, you just take eggs and just draw like bikinis on them and just place them all along the outside of Marvel headquarters. Like just be some, everybody's like, is this some sort of performative art piece? Like, no, this is just a woman who wants a sexy egg lady. Don't judge.
Listen. If we can have all these types of like sexy men who are like aliens, I think for just me, for the community of me, we deserve a sexy egg lady for all our sexy egg lady rights, you know? Like, listen, men have made everything so horny, but you're not gonna make the egg horny.
It's an egg. It's a part of the reproductive system. It has to be horny.
I feel like we've gone on too long for like the horny nanny.
We always do that. That's how we're always gonna end up. Go ahead.
And I think that's all I really have to say about Marauders. I think I went off for like a couple of minutes on that, and I kind of set my piece, and I'm gonna be more open to it going forward. I'll try to enjoy the new issues more. It's just like Duggan makes it very hard for me to enjoy because a lot of the activism in his book seems very insincere.
I get that.
It seems like I'm doing this so I can get a pass for doing this thing, which is sort of weird and fetishy.
That is an understandable argument. I'm a little bit halfway between liking it and getting where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I'm about halfway between your feeling and actually enjoying what I do. Like, I enjoy on like a fluff level, uh-huh. I enjoy it, but also like part of me is like, this feels very insincere. Uh-huh. Because I like cheesecake. Like I enjoy it there. I like cheesecake when it's sensible and works for the moment.
I'm
not gonna pretend I would be lying, but like I feel like I don't think he's exactly on that level with how to write that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Just my opinion.
I think it also comes from the fact that he's predominantly written white teams.
Yeah I can agree with that. But yeah, that's really all I really have to say, Marauders. I I'm interested to see how it ties into X of Swords. That's really, I'm really interested to see, like, what are these pirates going to do against, like, an invasion of demons? So that's going to definitely be interesting. That's all I really have to say. I'm hoping this book gets better. I'm hoping with, like, the delay and everything, I hope Duggan took some of criticism and does better. I don't think he will.
I think of all the ex-Sorcerers who've taken really good criticism, I think Brian Hill is, like, one of the ones who gets, like, who takes criticism sort of to heart. I think he really listens.
Yeah.
As, like, a writer in general. I think he and Howard are two of the ones that take it really well. I think Leah Williams takes criticism, but I don't think she takes it well.
I love Leah. Leo is so nice. Like, I... She DM'd me, like, an advanced copy of her indie book. I really like her. I get where you're coming from with your criticism. I don't feel she should have blocked you. I feel that was very...
Oh, I forgot the people on the podcast don't know that I'm blocked.
Yeah, you've said it before, though.
Have I? I said that I got banned from Twitter because of Josh Foley. I didn't ever say that I got banned. I got blocked by Leah Williams. I don't think... I'm just saying, as, like, in general, I think she's improved in taking criticism from last year. She's in a better place now, in terms of criticism. And I say this as someone who, I take criticism really hard. I once had a breakdown because someone told me my story wasn't that good. And granted, that happened, like, 4 or 3 years ago. And I was a lot younger, and I was still a fresh writer. And I didn't know how to really take criticism. And now... as I kind of accepted the fact that I will do stuff wrong and that nothing I write will ever be perfect. I've sort of had this mindset that nothing I write will be perfect, but at the very least it will be good. And I think that's a good mindset for a lot of writers to have. And I think Leah Williams is sort of getting there. And I don't personally wish her any ill. I personally think she can write. Like I said, Age of X-Men left a really bad taste in my mouth, and I think she sort of learned from it, but not really. Hopefully, as we go on to X-Factor, I don't have very high hopes for it. I have lukewarm hopes.
About at the same point as that you were with Marauders?
Not in the same way.
Not in the same... Okay, fair enough.
So, for X-Factor, it's more of like the... How do I say it? For X-Factor, it's more of the... I had high hopes for her in Age of X-Men, and she failed me. So I'm going into this with an open mind, unlike Marauders. I'm going this with, like, a... I kind of want to enjoy this book because it has a really good cast of characters. However, Leah Williams has had some controversy in the past, so I'm hoping she's learned from it, and this book will not be as heavy-handed, will be... like we'll kind of have like a lighter touch, you know, like a little bit less of her being overprotective over the ideas of the story and willing to take criticism.
That's fair. I'm personally, that's one of the books I'm most excited about, but I think I kind of want to circle back around to Brian Edward Hill a little bit, only because I think what we're about to discuss is a heavy subject, and he has some sort of tie to it. I just want to say something. I feel it would be inappropriate for us as an X-Men podcast and what X-Men represent on an allegorical, allegorical level. I think it would be inappropriate for us not to talk about the civil unrest that is going on in America. Brian Edward Hill, he's a friend.
He's coming to visit us in July, which is nice.
And he's sort of an acquaintance, and I see him as a sort of some type of person I aspire to be, because he looks at writing truly as a craft. He's so willing to teach, and he's very nice. And this past weekend, of course, there was civil unrest in multiple cities for good reasons. Some people didn't go about it the right way and went against the wishes of people. White people went about it the wrong way, against the wishes of Black protest leaders. And that has to be addressed, and I'm not going to pretend that didn't happen. But things have been very tense, as rightfully should. And Brian Edward Hill, it was yesterday morning. He said, this is a tweet from, I had a pretty tense moment this morning with law enforcement while walking my dog. I'm fine. I did the Jedi thing. And I kept it from escalating. Badge numbers recorded, all in process. Be careful out there. They're looking for a reason, even if you're just walking your dog. That's wrong on a level. Because he was walking his dog. Nobody brings their dog with them to go do something illegal. They were looking for a reason.
I think both you and I, as non-Black people, we will never understand the level of fear that Black people live in. And I think the only thing we can do is amplify Black voices. And in this time of situation, it's a time of solidarity with them, and it's a time of solidarity with the Black community. And we should not be expecting anything from it out of them, because we have gained so much from anti-Blackness. And I think acknowledging the fact that we, a society, gain from racism, we gain from anti-Blackness, I think that's something that we should definitely keep in the front of our heads when we're doing this. If you're going out to protest, and I'm just going to implore you to do what you think is right. You can donate, you can sign petitions, you can educate yourself, and you can protest. But if you're going to protest and you are not Black, you are not there to do anything other than be a shield for Black people, especially if you're white, and especially if you're white passing. I unfortunately do not have as much as I'm an activist and I'm a protester, I could easily be deported, and and this seems very selfish of me, and I realize when I say this out loud, it seems extremely selfish, but I'm doing everything else in my ability to be a useful citizen, and a useful ally. It's hard for me to protest, and I've been in other protests, but the other protests I've been into, the climate change protests, they are never this violent, and this is 100% a race issue. Yeah. This is not about, as non-Black people, this is not about us. This is 100%, this is a spotlight for Black people, and I say this in a way that, there's no other way that I can say this, but this is about us helping them.
It's not our place to tell them how to protest and how to feel, because they've had that. They've done everything, whether it's right or wrong. They've tried working by the oppressive system, and it still doesn't work. And while I think I get anger, I understand anger. On a level, I get it. I see it. It makes me angry. For example, there was the video went viral from yesterday. I believe it was in Birmingham. I think might have been in Charleston, South Carolina. There was a kid. Well, he looked like he might have been like 18, 19, younger than me. I don't mean to call him a kid. He probably was an adult. Just a young, before 20s, maybe very early 20s, but everybody was kneeling. It was a line of protests. Everybody was kneeling, talking. He was making an impassioned speech to the police, and he was being a lot nicer than I might have been in his situation. He was preaching love and kindness. He's like, I want to know you. I want to understand you. He's like, I get it. Everybody has a bad day. We're all scared right now. He's like, I want to understand you. Love you, and the line of police parted and a policeman came through, and it looked almost like the police officer was going to come talk to him, just like have an actual conversation. Instead, they picked him up and took him behind the line of police officers, put him to his knees, and arrested him. And that's and, the problem. That's wrong. And when all people say, oh, you should peacefully protest.
How much more peaceful can you get than that?
He's saying, like, everyone's like, oh, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, professed love and he through peace. And, like, there was no, this kid said everything. He said, like, I want to know you. He's like, I want to understand. I want to love you. I would like love in return. And there was very little more peaceful than that. And he's still taken. And he was released. I did find, so he was released and he's safe. I've seen pictures of him and he's happy now. I don't say he's happy, but like he smiled and he's safe.
And but I think
it still happened and it's still wrong and it could still go on his record. And it could hurt him in the future because jobs and it's just, it's wrong. He didn't do anything, and even the people around him were like, oh, no, he's talking. Mm-hmm. They didn't fight. They didn't do anything. They let him get taken. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I was in that situation, if I could have let that happen.
I think
I'm not saying they're wrong. They thought it was right, and they didn't want to escalate it. That's good. You don't want to escalate these things because as police officers, they are more armed. You will lose. Mm-hmm. As sad as it is, you're gonna lose. And yeah. It frustrates me on such a level. I've been having a hard time sleeping lately. Like I'm very, very restless and it's just like it's frustrating on a like soul level. I'm just like I have a hard time, not just like my head, my brain's constantly on fire. I don't know what to do. I don't see things getting better, and that makes me sad.
I think our anger, the anger we used in this situation, is something that we should use for good. I think we should stay angry. I think we get to be angry, but other people, like Black people, don't get to be angry because they have to be seen as model. They're held to such a higher standard than we are. And we get to be angry, but we don't get to be violent. We don't get to do anything except support. And I think the best way to do that at the current moment is to educate. And this, and I've been saying this a lot on Twitter, and I think I've talked it to death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is not the one-time thing. You have to do it. I as an activist, and I'm not comparing climate change to human rights. This is not at all what I'm saying, but as a climate change activist, I, for 4 years, I had been bettering myself to be a better person, to commit to zero waste, and it's very hard to do that. And I don't think you understand, in a society where everything is commodified, it's completely hard to become zero waste, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And especially with family members, we just don't understand what you're trying to do. And I think racism and the Black Lives Matter movement, and I think you have to do it daily. It's not a one-time thing. This doesn't stop tomorrow. This doesn't stop in a month. This doesn't stop ever. You keep doing this. I think the one thing you have to do constantly is call out those who are racist. Call out those biases that you have. This is a time to admit that you have racial biases. And you have to work on them. Because we all have racial biases. And
that's true.
And you and I are young. We were taught this. We can unlearn them. And maybe our next generation wouldn't have to unlearn them.
Yeah.
You know? Because they will not be taught hate. But that is just hope.
Yeah.
And hope means nothing without action.
Exactly. I want to finish close out this podcast. A friend of mine, at Man the First on Twitter, he made a thread closer to when everything all this started about what he's Black, about what Dawn of X meant to him as stories and how he found it as inspirational. And it's okay that I'm just letting, I asked him first if I could read this tweet thread. He said yes. He said thank you for asking. And I just wanted to read this because it is very, very kind of beautiful. He's like, the thing I love about the potential for mutants to be totally compelling, totally divorced from persecution. I say that because the chief thing my government education taught me about the people like myself was slavery, like it was the only notable thing about us. The same thing happens with mutants, but they are not defined by oppression either. The millions of people who can't separate them from suffering isn't just chance. It's fed and cultivated by the same system that educated me, one that valorizes minority pain to reduce accountability. If national curriculum taught racial unrest as continuations of lethal hatred that are rightly violently opposed, rather than a blameless phenomenon that most notable minorities tolerate kindly, more people would relate to Dawn of X. But hey, for decades, the narrative has been that only admirable thing minorities can do is keep dying and keep being nice about it until their oppressors come around. So that's what the X-Men have been, and that's what a lot of fans expect. But if we can't migrate into stories outside of that, their suffering, then we're saying humans are the most interesting thing about mutants. I enjoy them being more than their struggle. The little peaks we've gotten into bridging mutant society, both big and small, are incredible. Acts of charity, like such as Tempest aging whiskey, Forge's organic architecture, Cypher's language building, economics, polyamory, religion, justice, genocide isn't a better story. Krakoa even adds richer context to struggle on hand and gives them utopia to fight for future protect. Here's hoping it'll be around for a while. I think that was a great thread, very well written, and I thought it was something to rightfully talk about right now as it pertains to, and of course X-Men don't always work as an allegorical sense, and they never should be all you care about. It shouldn't be the model, but it should be able to, because we get a lot of things from fiction. Like I was shaped through fiction. We all stories we learn and we take things from them, and I think that was a very wonderful thing he took from the stories.
I think I don't know how to close this off in a respectful way, but we hope that Fox and I, both of us, are non-Black. I'm a person of color, but there has been discussion on Twitter a lot that this is not my fight, this is Black people's fight, because this is a Black issue, and I don't think we should be ashamed of saying the word Black in this situation. Yeah, I think you should erase the word person of color from your vocabulary for this situation, because it is specifically about Black people. Yeah. And I hope we have not stepped over any toes talking about this. We wanted to have a strong stance on this. And we record videos a week in advance, so whatever we say now is going to be true next week, the week after, true in a year.
Yeah. I don't think this is going to be the last time we talk about this topic, only because I don't think it's going to go away soon. Especially with things that happened in the last couple of hours,
If you really want to date this episode, just to our listeners, and this is on a more humorous note, but not really, because it's kind of terrifying. Trump, a couple of hours ago, like 2 hours ago, decided to send the troops on protesters. So if you really want to date this episode down to the hour when we're recording, that's how you do it.
Yeah. It's certain things done by a certain leader. I feel it's only going to make things worse in both his actions and his words. So I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. But this is it's all I have to say is Black Lives Matter. That's it, and that comes off. And I know that may come off the shallow because everybody's saying it, but we have to say it because it's true and it's something we have to remember. And I
think a good way to start it off is to, and this is also to remember that because of the protest, a lot of these people are probably going to be sick from COVID. And please remember the statistics that Black people are both more likely to get COVID and more likely to die from COVID because they are denied medical treatments. So in a couple of weeks from now, because we should care about Black lives when they're alive too, please consider donating to your local COVID relief fund. If you can volunteer your services in these situations, please do it. And it seems very weird of me to talk about COVID when we have something else going on. But I need you all to remember that I read the statistics. I do every day. I read about COVID and I read about the potential treatments. But the harrowing statistics that Black people are more likely to die because they're more likely to be denied treatment because of racism and racial bias in the medical system. I need you all to keep that in mind in the next coming of weeks when people ask for mutual relief, when people ask for funding for different COVID programs, because it's not going, the fight for Black lives is keeping them alive. It's not just when they die we protest, it's keeping them alive and understanding how the system is actively suppressing them. Yeah. That's something you should be aware of.
Agreed.
I think that's all we can really say, and I think saying more than this will come off as more insincere. We have posted on our Twitter the card. I personally, on Worthington's on Twitter, I have the Brooklyn Bail Fund underneath, pinned in my description. I think it's because I'm from Brooklyn, so obviously that's where I kind of funneling in support. Fox, there's probably some for the city of Raleigh, I think. I'm not 100% sure.
I'm not sure either. I'm not really plugged into a lot of local protests right now, because I think in my fervor to keep up with what's going on a national basis, I forgot to look closer to me, and I should look into that. But it's funny, I was terrifying, but I had driven downtown my area to pick up a pizza, and from my favorite pizza place. That sounds very pet, like, that sounds very, like, first world thing. Yeah. Like, all the windows were boarded up in the area. There were multiple National Guards and police officers around the Capitol building in the area. And so I know they are gearing up for something, and we do have a curfew in our area, just like you have a curfew in yours.
Yeah.
And so it is something we have to keep in mind. And you have to be safe when it comes to this curfew thing, because, like, even if you're on your, like, say, your porch, that doesn't automatically mean you can't be attacked, because I watched a video, it went viral the day before yesterday, of these people sitting on their porch, and it was in Minneapolis, and they were watching the National Guard roll up the street on foot and both, and there was a car too, and there was a Humvee, and the National Guard told the people to go inside, but they stood their ground. Because on the Q&A page for the city, it says, are you allowed to be on your porch, in your yard outside your house? And it said yes. And they stood their ground, and the National Guard shot them with paint canisters. And I think we're at the point where you have to be extra safe. It's hard to take chances.
There's so much horrific stuff going on, and as much as this is happening in the States, I know we have some international listeners, and there's anti-Blackness in all our communities. It seeps through. This is not just an American thing. You don't get to absolve yourself from it. I know a lot of STEM majors are sort of avoiding this as to not seem political, as if science has not always been political.
Mm-hmm.
Science has always been used for evil. And yeah. Black bodies have always been used for science because we have not valued their life enough.
Exactly.
And we should be ashamed of ourselves. But we don't use this shame to guilt. And we don't use this shame and guilt and try to absolve ourselves by talking to Black people and apologizing. That's not our actions in this situation will always speak louder than words. So this is sort of me saying that, like, you're responsible. You're responsible for yourself, and you are responsible for what happens. We are not going to be the people who tell you you're right, you're wrong. You have to be educating yourself because this is a high stress situation, and you don't get absolved. You're going to be shameful. You're going to feel guilt because you're racist, and that's normal. But that's how you learn. And I think the big topic of this is just. And I think the bigger topic of this is just to be compassionate and to love other people at this moment. I'm not saying to love your racist neighbor. I'm saying to love the community.
Yeah.
And this is not time to, like, spread positivity. I think that's sort of, I don't know, it's sort of weird to spread positivity in a time like this. I think it's time to be eloquent with our words. It's time to write to our representatives. It's time to vote. And I think Vote Out the Hate at the current moment is really stupid. But I think in the future, this is something we should really consider looking into. But at this time, it's very direct action. Make sure to look after the community you live in. Make sure that you can babysit for people who want to go to protests. Make all this kind of stuff matters.
Yeah.
You know?
There's always something you can do. There's always going to be something you can't do. Don't, just because you're at home doesn't mean there's not something you can do. And so I think that's just take, and this is going to sound like a platitude, and yeah. Take care of each other. Just at this time, not say like unity, as in like you have to be one unified people.
Yeah.
There has to be unity in the fact that there is a force fighting against their people. There has to come a point where you have to stand together against it in the best way possible. There has to be listening. There has to be understanding. And there has to be a way to do this. And I don't know what that is, but I want to find out. I want to help. That's all. I think that's a good spot where we should end things today.
I think we should end with a piece of maybe good news. Sort of good news, I think. Okay. I talked about this yesterday on Twitter, but the Moderna vaccine has entered phase 2 of trials, and that is really fantastic. Good news. Phase 2 trials don't mean a lot, but it means that, like, this virus, this has shown some potential in that it forms antibodies in healthy bodies. So now they're testing it on also people who are over 65 to see if it's safe for them.
It's also being
tested with a placebo, and that's really exciting news. And there's another vaccine where they're getting into phase 1 trials, and that's the attenuated, it's the Sinovac vaccine, and it's more of a traditional vaccine rather than the Moderna vaccine. I'm not going to go into, like, the sciences of the vaccines because I don't think that's the podcast for it. There's another podcast for it. If you want to listen to more about, like, viruses and stuff like that, This Week in Virology is an amazing podcast. And so is This Podcast Will Kill You. They talk about this stuff in detail and much better than I ever will. But this is some glimmer of hope in the grand scheme of things that we have. These vaccines in development. There's also been some research published on COVID that kind of is leading us to treatment in the correct way, seeing it less as a respiratory disease and more as a circulatory disease, a cardiovascular disease. So that might might lead us to have more efficient treatments and in the long run have a lower mortality rate. And I think this is some good news. And I know the tone of this podcast is kind of solemn and melancholy at the current moment, but I thought maybe you guys having just like a little bit of good news at the current moment. It's healthy. You know, not everything is doom and gloom. Things are bad, but they can get better, and they will get better as long as we work in unity and as long as we work together. And I think that's it for us. I'm Almas. I'm at Unworthington on Twitter. I'm Permanent DK on Instagram. I usually use that more for real life photos, but you're free to follow me on there because I'm doing more protesting work on there. But even on my current Twitter, I'm doing as much online activism as I can.
My name is Fox. You can find me at Agent777 on Twitter. I am just retweeting all the things I can find just to let people be aware of things that are happening. So if you are not in the right headspace right now, if you are a black person and not in that right headspace to look at that stuff right now, I suggest not going to look at my Twitter. But I think people need to be aware, and that's pretty much all my Twitter is right now. Thank you, everybody, for dealing with us for this whole thing. We know we kind of went off onto a whole non-X-Men thing, but like I said, I don't think it would be right, especially with our subject matter, to not discuss what's going on right now.
And we'll say goodbye in a moment, but I do want to say this. If you call out other people who are racist, it's fine. That's what you're supposed to be doing. Call out other people who don't care. That's what you're supposed to be doing, and that's one step closer to getting to our goal. And with that, thank you so much for visiting. And we'll see you next week when we talk about Excalibur.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.